Is it 2016 yet? Well, it seems the future has already arrived in our state, which is playing host to 7 potential Republican presidential candidates over the course of 11 days, this week and next. I'm Ben Kiefer. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. They'll, of course, be meeting with voters, hobnobbing with donors, lending their clout at campaign rallies, also gorging on all that delicious fried food, things on a stick at the Iowa State Fair this coming Saturday. Several will also attend the Family Leadership Summit in Ames, even though we're still several months away from any of them declaring their candidacies. The field is already being sized up, and that's our primary mission this hour with our guests. Donna Hoffman is Chair of Political Science at the University of Northern Iowa in our Cedar Falls studio. Hi, Donna.
Hi, Ben.
Also with us, Tim Hagel, Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of Iowa in our Iowa City studio. Hi, Tim.
Hey there.
Well, these 11 potential GOP White House candidates, I said 7 of them in the state in the last 11 days, but here are the names of 11. We have to keep our numbers a little bit straight here. Paul Ryan, Mike Huckabee, Rick Perry, Rand Paul, Jeb Bush, Marco Rubio, Chris Christie, Rick Santorum, Ted Cruz, Scott Walker, Bobby Jindal. I think I've exhausted the list. There may be a few I have missed there, but we want to reach out to you, our political junkies, for this hour listening. Which of the potential GOP presidential candidates excite you and why? 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. Which of the potential GOP presidential candidates excite you and why? 1-866-780-9100. You can also email us, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Find Iowa Public Radio on Facebook to leave your comments there, or tweet us at IPR Talk. Before we get to the individual candidates, I want to ask you both about this primary season, the caucus season coming up, a Republican nomination that is completely up for grabs, a wide open field. I don't know how unique this is. Donna Hoffman, how do you see this compared to the last few election cycles?
Well, you know, anytime you have a presidency being left open, as we're going to have in 2016, where the incumbent's term limited, he's not going to be running, it's going to be a pretty wide open affair, and it certainly is for the Republicans. And so Iowans get this smorgasbord, if you will, of candidates coming to as you mentioned, sample food at the fair, talk to Iowans, go to fundraisers, and Iowans can, you know, take their measure of these people.
Mm-hmm. Well, what opportunities do you think that offers the GOP to have this wide open of a field? Because we know, and we've talked about on this program many times, Donna, that the GOP has various factions here.
Right. And it has it within the state, but also nationally as well. And so you have candidates that appeal more to the Christian conservatives. You have candidates that appeal more to the more business establishment types. Some people from the Liberty faction, which was kind of left over from Ron Paul's candidacy within the state. And so you have these kinds of factions. And again, some of these you'll have nationally where the voters look these candidates over in the state. They have the best opportunity of any state in the nation because all of these candidates come and court them and talk to them, address their issues, shake their hand, look them in the eye. And that's what Iowans expect. And so, you know, the Republican Party then has, if you're a someone who potentially wants to be president someday within the Republican Party, you know, now is the time to maybe take a little visit to Iowa and see how the lay of the land is.
Tim Hagel.
Yeah, that's I agree with all that. And what's one key statement that Donna made there was the idea of someday, that it doesn't necessarily have to be for this particular cycle. Sometimes these folks are here to perhaps raise their national profile. Sometimes they're maybe looking for a vice presidential slot and just to sort of see how Iowa works so that they can plan on it perhaps for some future run, 2020, 2024, something of that nature, or maybe 2016.
Okay, let's concentrate this hour on the GOP, potential GOP candidates that have been in Iowa or will be in this week and next. Rand Paul, U.S. Senator from Kentucky. Let's start off with him. He's also been in the news nationally, crisscrossing Iowa for at least a dozen public and private events, all 4 congressional districts he's been in, including today and yesterday. He will have spent 6 days in Iowa this cycle, booking at least 15 events. But when we look at what's been happening in the news lately, at a campaign event for Congressman Steve King in Okoboji earlier this week. Senator Paul was hustled away by an aide as Congressman King was confronted by a dreamer, a young woman who identifies herself as Erica, whose parents came to the U.S. illegally under a number of versions of the DREAM Act. Children brought to the U.S. illegally who obtain a certain level of education would be allowed residency. Congressman King is opposed to the DREAM Act. Let's listen to a little bit of this interaction.
I'm actually a dreamer myself, and I'm originally from Mexico, but I've been raised here. I graduated from Arizona State University, and Arizona State University. And I know you want to get rid of DACA, so I want to give you the opportunity. If you really want to get rid of it, just rip mine. You can go ahead and do that. You take my DACA, you're going to take really everything that right now I have in college. I did graduate from college. I just don't understand why you've been wanting to do that. And for you to be fighting so much against dreamers.
A little hard to hear, but you could hear the chairs scraping at the beginning of that clip as Senator Rand Paul leaves the table. Congressman King has criticized that confrontation as an ambush. It illustrates, though, some of these difficulties facing the 2016 hopefuls campaigning for candidates more than a year advance of their own campaign. Senator Paul has a different stance on the DREAM Act from Congressman King, he was campaigning for, doesn't he, Tim Hagel?
Yeah, and I watched the whole clip, which you can find up on YouTube, and basically it was a fairly polite conversation on both parts. Congressman King wanted to make his points, and the woman there, who was also a young man, was with her, was an attorney, and so Steve King and the young man were talking the legal stuff back and forth. And so even if you don't disagree with Steve King's position, and many don't, that it was fairly polite, and he basically kept trying to make his points until they finally got tired and decided to go ahead and leave.
Mm-hmm. What do you make of this confrontation? Conversation, I guess I should say, Donna Hoffman, that is making the circles viral political videos this past few days.
It's certainly something all candidates have to watch out for, these people with cell phones. And obviously, this was an interaction that was filmed. It was planned to be filmed. And, it was fairly respectful. It is interesting to watch the video, though, and watch Rand Paul's exit from that situation. And, here's the problem that Rand Paul has in this particular situation is that, Steve King's not running for president and Rand Paul maybe is, and they don't necessarily agree on this particular issue.
Hasn't Rand Paul been for the DREAM Act? Didn't he vote for that?
He has been kind of cagey on the way that he has talked about immigration. So when he was in the Senate, when the Senate bill passed about a year ago, and he did not vote for that, but he came out and said, the reason I didn't vote for it was because, the border's not strong enough. Before we can do anything about the undocumented immigrants that are here, the border has to be secured. And so he talked about being for immigration reform and also about why he didn't vote for the bill. If you recall from this era, and another person we can talk about today is Marco Rubio. Marco Rubio was part of that Gang of Eight that put that that immigration bill together. And so, some of this is positioning in terms of the potential candidates for 2016. But Rand Paul is very careful in how he talks about immigration. And Steve King, I don't know if careful is the word I would say in talking in the way that he talks about immigration. He feels very
colorful,
passionate,
colorful
and he's very provocative. He feels very passionate about this issue. I think that comes through in the way that he puts his position out there in the video that's going viral. Steve King has a different way of talking about things. And again, it's because he's in a different position and there's some differences in terms of views there.
Now, Rand Paul has been coy about his intentions, despite the fact that he's been spending a lot of time here in Iowa. In a June interview on Uncommon Knowledge with Peter Robinson of the Hoover Institution, he joked about his Iowa stops.
It must just be a coincidence. I don't know why those states keep popping up on my schedule. But now, whether I do or don't, I do want to be part of the Republican Party becoming a national party again. I think we've become a regional party. And we're seriously in danger of becoming a red state party, but we have states we need to compete in. We need to compete in New England again. We're losing our grip even in New Hampshire up there. We need to compete on the West Coast. And I truly think we can.
Paul's PACT has already hired two Iowa operatives expected to run his likely 2016 campaign, A.J. Spiker, Steve Grubbs, both of whom former state GOP chairman. I wonder, Tim, this political infrastructure of his father, Ron Paul, running several times here in Iowa, left behind following his 2008 and 2012 presidential bids. That is that something that's still in place, and can Rand Paul, or is he taking advantage of that?
Well, I think that's the one of the questions that Rand Paul has to address, is that he basically has a twofold, or has to have a twofold strategy. One is to re-energize that base that his father had and get those folks excited and engaged again. They kind of pulled back a little bit after the last cycle. There was some pushback with the Republican Party of Iowa and some leadership issues and things going on, and so the Liberty folks kind to pull back a little bit. We'll have to wait and see if they can be re-energized and sort of participate in the caucuses again. But then Rand Paul also has to reach out to a broader audience mm-hmm. of Republicans, at least in the caucuses, and of course for the general election too. And so that's going to be the key. And so in certain respects, he has to distinguish himself, if not distance himself, from some of his father's positions.
Mm-hmm. River to River listeners, which of the potential GOP presidential candidates excite you? Tell us, 1-866-780-9100, River to River at iowapublicradio.org. Tweet us at IPR Talk or find Iowa Public Radio on Facebook. How much light do you see, Donna Hoffman, between Rand Paul's positions and Ron Paul's positions?
You know, he is actually pretty careful to, in some ways, distance himself from his father. And recall when Ron Paul was campaigning in the state in the last cycle, Rand Paul did appear with him occasionally. And so, you know, he has he's not a stranger to the state, to the process. But, you know, there have been things that Rand Paul has distanced himself on. Including some of the more things like getting rid of the Fed, for example. He's been a little more measured in some of those areas. And so he's, I think, very cognizant of trying to be his own person and to utilize his father's network here to the extent that he can. And also, though, tell Iowa voters that he's different from Ron Paul and the things that he stands for, and to try to be a little more mainstream in his appeal.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about another candidate as we go through some of the potential GOP candidates, many of them, seven of them here in the course of 11 days this week and next week. Let's talk about Marco Rubio. You mentioned Marco Rubio, the senator from Florida, Donna. He was the guest speaker at a fundraiser for U.S. Senate candidate Joni Ernst at agribusiness leader Bruce Rastetter's home in rural Hardin County on Saturday. Then he stayed for the summer party. He's been in Iowa 3 days this cycle, doing at least three events. In a campaign event for Joni Ernst on June 2nd, the senator from Florida, Marco Rubio, recounted his own ties to farming.
Look, I'm honored to be with you here today. It actually, when you talk about an Iowa farmer, it reminds me of a farmer that lived in my own family. It was my grandfather. Had a huge influence on my life. He was born in rural Cuba to a farming family. When he was 6 years old, he had polio. He lost the use of one of his legs. So the only chance he was ever going to have to get ahead in life was if he got an education. And he was one of 12 kids. His family sent him away to school. The only one that learned how to read and write. And he learned how to operate a telegraph. As a telegraph operator, actually ended up getting a job one day at the railroad company. But years went by, and obviously immigrated to the United States, lived with us for the first 13 years of my life. I used to sit on the porch of our home as he smoked one of his three daily cigars. He used to sit in this little folding aluminum chair. And I was a very curious young man. I loved to talk about history and politics, and he would share all those thoughts with me. Well, he was a huge influence on my life. As I look back at the things he taught me, the facts and figures about history were great. But the one thing he instilled in me is that because I was a citizen of this special and exceptional country, there was nothing that I couldn't accomplish. That I lived in the one place in human history where the son of a bartender and a maid, which is what I was, had the same chances as the son of a millionaire or a president.
Florida Senator Marco Rubio in Iowa on June 2nd at a campaign event for Joni Ernst. Donna Hoffman, what do you see as Marco Rubio's strengths and weaknesses?
You know, I think he has a compelling story. I mean, he's sharing part of that there. He certainly has been seen as part of the generation of the GOP that could try to bring the party back a little bit to having a broader appeal. That, you know, we heard something from Rand Paul in a clip you played earlier talk about that as well, because he has a Hispanic background. It is something that a lot of people have seen as being a way that the party could maybe talk more about immigration, try to solve immigration, the thorny problem that that is. And Marco Rubio maybe was the one person to do that. But again, he did take some steps in terms of the Senate Comprehensive Immigration Bill. And, you know, after he was involved in that, people within the state of Iowa in the Republican Party were very critical. Certain factions, I should say, not everybody, were very vocal about the fact that, well, Rubio's chances in the state have just, you know, gone down. And I think that was very overstated.
What was the stance that he actually took?
That he was for the comprehensive immigration reform that would have a path to citizenship. It was quite an arduous path. And that also there would be things done along the border to strengthen that. And there were other provisions to that as well, but that was kind of it in a nutshell. And he was seen as being open to working with Democrats, because the Gang of Eight was a bipartisan group, in trying to cobble together a comprehensive immigration reform bill that passed the Senate, but it hasn't gone anywhere in the House, nor do we expect it to before the elections.
Okay, Marco Rubio, his chances, Tim Hagel, as Donna there described, and you have this hyper-partisan atmosphere. Can someone who sits on a committee with the Democrats be a viable candidate for president?
Oh, I think so. And certainly there were problems in what Marco Rubio did that, as Donna was saying, caused him some problems among people, among a certain faction of Republicans. And a lot of times those Republicans, what their concern is they don't want to have another repeat of what happened in the 80s, where there was basically an amnesty and then saying, well, but we'll make sure it doesn't happen again. But here we are 30 years or so later, and it's happening again. And that's why Republicans, and as you were saying, Rand Paul in particular, suggesting, among others, that you have to secure the border, and that really has to happen first. And if that does happen, then of course you do have to face the problem of, well, what to do with all the people here. And at that point, I think perhaps some notion of a path to citizenship, have to try to avoid the word amnesty to get Republicans on board. But if there is some sort of path to citizenship once the border is secure, Republicans will probably be willing to go along. But they're afraid that if you don't secure the border first, then it's just going to be a continuing problem.
Tim Hagel with us of the University of Iowa, Donna Hoffman of the University of Northern Iowa, our political analyst this week on Politics Day. Join our conversation. We're asking, which of the potential GOP presidential candidates excite you and why? Seven of them in Iowa this week and next week. That's why we're taking the opportunity to size it up so far in advance, a little bit like the holiday shopping season. It seems to come earlier and earlier each cycle, but nevertheless, they are here, so we're talking about them. Which of them excite you? 1-866-780-9100. Hayes is joining us from Cedar Rapids. Hi, Hayes.
Hello.
Hi.
Marco Rubio excites me. I think he has a lot broader appeal than some of the more traditional Republican candidates. But the one that really gets me excited is Rand Paul. I was a big Ron Paul fan, and Rand Paul has a lot of the same libertarian-type leanings as his father, but also seems to me to be a little bit more electable, so to speak, than his dad. I mean, Ron Paul was always, you know, abolish the Fed, abolish the IRS, and, you know, that he was probably never really realistically electable. I would like your panelists' opinion on, you know, is Rand a little bit more electable than his father was?
Tim Hagel, does he seem to be positioning himself so as a more moderate version of his father in some ways?
Well, that's the goal. And even if it's not necessarily more moderate, it's the rhetoric that's attached to the particular position, that instead of, as the caller was indicating, that Ron Paul was just front and center, very blunt, let's do this kind of a thing, where, as Donna was saying, Rand Paul takes a more nuanced approach in some of the rhetoric, even if perhaps his ultimate goal is the same. And so it's that kind of reaching out, perhaps not being quite so blunt in the way you talk about the positions or the goals you're trying to achieve, can perhaps make you more electable.
I wonder if we have a Rand Paul here, Donna Hoffman, does he have a realistic chance at the nomination considering, or let's talk about the Iowa caucuses, winning the Iowa caucuses, considering the evangelical voters in the state?
Well, I think his bigger challenge actually is his foreign policy. in terms of getting the Republican nomination. And he is not as hawkish. He tends to be more less interventionist and, you know, less foreign aid. And that gives him problems within the Republican Party to some degree. And, you know, in terms of his chances within the state, you know, specifically you mentioned Christian conservatives, you know, I think that remains to be seen because he is still carving out space for himself in terms of what he believes, how he's not his father within the state and introducing himself to Iowa voters. So I think it remains to be mm-hmm. seen.
I wonder if he's still dodging that question because I've interviewed him a couple of times and it seems to me he dodges the question saying it's not a useful exercise to talk about how he differs from his father.
Well, and that could be. But, you know, he does. I mean, the caller was pointed something out. You know, he was excited about Ron Paul and Ron Paul does take this. And I think what the caller maybe was referring to is libertarian and takes that in terms of social issues. And so younger voters in the Republican Party oftentimes tend to be more socially liberal. And lean towards that libertarian in terms of gay marriage, in terms of legalization of marijuana. And so Rand Paul is kind of an interesting Republican candidate. But again, I think that his stance on foreign policy, while it's still kind of evolving, poses probably the biggest problem to him getting the nomination.
What do you see as we've got about a minute or so, Tim Hagel, as the biggest hurdles facing Rand Paul?
I would basically agree that as far as the social conservatives are concerned, that they're going to be concerned about particular issues, whether it's same-sex marriage or the abortion in various forms. So they'll want to make sure that Rand Paul is close, if not right on, to whatever their position is. But they're not necessarily going to be single-issue voters, and although, of course, some will be. And so they'll be looking probably at some of the economic issues as well. So those will be critically important. Donna's right that the foreign policy is kind of a big problem, although it's the domestic policies that usually drive presidential elections. The difference might be is given what's happening in the world right now with things in Ukraine and Gaza, and if they escalate or not, we have to wait and see. And it may push a lot of those foreign aid things to the forefront in ways that we don't usually see, especially this early in a presidential election.
Okay, you might be thinking it's already 2016. It's not, but the future has arrived in our state. We'll talk about more of the GOP, potential GOP presidential candidates when we come back. I want to ask you which of them excites you and why. Long list of 11 of them, 7 of them in our state recently. 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org. Iowa Public Radio is also on Facebook, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. Donna Hoffman of the University of Northern Iowa with us. Tim Hagel of the University of Iowa. Back in just a few minutes. It's a Politics Day edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. 7 potential GOP presidential candidates making their way to Iowa this week and next in this first big round of visits by potential presidential candidates. Marco Rubio, Rand Paul, Mike Huckabee, Bobby Jindal, Rick Santorum, Rick Perry, Ted Cruz, all here or will be here in the next few days. So we're using the opportunity to size them up, even though it's about a year and a half before the Iowa caucuses. With Donna Hoffman, Chair of Political Science at the University of Northern Iowa, Tim Hagel, Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of Iowa. Join our conversation. Tell us which of these or other potential GOP presidential candidates excite you and why. 1-866-780-9100. River to River at iowapublicradio.org. We're also on Facebook. Tweet us at IPR Talk. Let's talk a little bit as we try to scamper through these names and have a few comments of analysis on some of them. Ted Cruz, a U.S. Senator from Texas. Cruz was here Saturday for an exclusive party at GOP donor and agribusiness leader Bruce Rastetter's home. He also attended a fundraiser for Republican U.S. Senate candidate Joni Ernst. He returns this Saturday to Iowa as well to speak at the gathering of Christian conservative activists at the Family Leadership Summit in Ames. He will have spent 7 days in Iowa this cycle after this trip is finished, doing at least 8 events. Tim Hagel, size up the strengths and weaknesses of Ted Cruz as a potential candidate for the GOP.
Well, in many respects, he has some of the same appealing qualities that Marco Rubio does in terms of a compelling story. He's younger, and he's also Hispanic, of course. And what also makes him somewhat appealing to conservatives is that he does have a seemingly stronger conservative record. He's stronger on the immigration issue. But on the other hand, he's also sort of come to the fore in ways that perhaps makes him more of a target for Democrats. And so there's a question of the electability issue. And another question, too, is simply that you've also got another Texan potentially running in Rick Perry. And I've talked to some reporters from Texas news outlets to say, well, can they both run? What kind of conflict will this create? And, well, it just gives voters here, at least in Iowa, an additional choice. And, of course, the Perry issue is a whole separate one.
Mm-hmm. Donna, what do you think of Ted Cruz as a potential candidate?
He excites a lot of people. He's a firebrand. As Tim mentioned, he's younger. He brings a lot of energy to what he does. And so, I think he will get a decent view. People will look at him in the state. How, again, that fleshes out, I think it's way too early to tell. But he certainly appeals to some of the people who have Tea Party leanings and really like that full-throated, let's be acting to shrink the federal government. He really gives voice to those kinds of ideas.
But would he be criticized, though? He isn't actually a compromiser. He doesn't find common ground. That's not what Ted Cruz is about, though, right?
Yes, but people who go to caucuses in Iowa aren't always looking for compromisers. And so the electorate that you're appealing to at the caucus stage are the people who are activists within the party and in the Republican Party. They tend to be a little more to the right. And you also have to, because caucuses are events where you have to go and you give up a significant amount of your time in the winter, you have to have people excited about you. So you may have a candidate that, is by all measures acceptable, but maybe not exciting. And that candidate might not get their supporters out to the caucuses, might not get people excited. They're okay, but I'm not going to leave my couch on, January or February in 2016 to go actually caucus for those people. So there's something to be said for enthusiasm of the base in an event like the Iowa caucuses.
Sam, one of our listeners, writes to us. He says, I have heard of a group of Republicans that are supporting gay marriage. I am proud that Iowa has legalized marriage equality. Do any of these candidates have professed views on this? So, Tim, can you tell us perhaps which of them would be okay on this social issue?
The confused face I was making didn't clue you.
Yeah,
that okay. I'm not entirely sure. I think in some respects some have certainly come out in favor of traditional marriage, and I can't run down the list. I don't recall right off the top of my head. But I know that if you have taken a somewhat more nuanced approach along the lines of, well, personally, I'm in favor of traditional marriage, but we have to follow the law. And so until, the Supreme Court rules on it or something of that nature, they're sort of taking a wait-and-see kind of position. And those sort of more nuanced positions may not always satisfy the social conservatives, but we have to wait and see.
I guess I don't see the rundown, but would it be fair to say, Donna, that those attending, I think there are five of them in this group attending the Family Leadership Summit in Ames this Saturday, will not be those in favor?
I think that's a fair assumption. I think of the, the laundry list of candidates we're kind of looking at, Chris Christie is the one who's been a little more subtle in terms of where he stands in terms of that, and he's kind of signaled, I think, an openness to civil unions, perhaps. The people attending Cruz and Huckabee and Jindal and Perry and Santorum, who are going to be at the Family Leader event this weekend, that's not something that they're going to be open to at this point.
Let's talk a little bit about Chris Christie, also Rick Perry, and they're connected in this way. We'll hear a little bit of audio now. Another characteristic of those mentioned in these hopefuls is their unanimous and effusive praise for our governor, Terry Branstad. Here's New Jersey Governor Chris Christie, who serves as chair of the Republican Governors Association, back on July 17th in an appearance in Marion, Iowa.
Governor Branstad is a role model for me and for others around the country about what public service is really supposed to be all about. After having, won four terms as governor here and then going back out to the private sector, when he saw Iowa in real, real deep trouble in 2010, he and Kim Reynolds stepped up to the plate and said that they were going to do something to change Iowa and make the lives of Iowans better. And he didn't need to do that at that point in his career. He had already served 16 years as governor, but he stepped up because he put Iowa before his own personal interests. And that's the way he's run his administration for the last 4 years. And he and the lieutenant governor are two people that I consider friends, and also who are really outstanding public servants. And so as chairman of the RGA, I'm happy to be here to lend our support. We've been involved in this race already in a number of different ways. We're going to continue to be involved in this race. I'm going to help in any way that I possibly can. And lastly, before we take some questions, I just want to thank all the people from Iowa today who have been so warm and so welcoming to me. Every time I come here, folks are really just so kind to me and have the most generous things to say. And so I thank them for welcoming somebody from as far away as I am. And I'll be back here. I'll be back here a lot, as much as Governor Branstad wants me to be back here.
Okay. New Jersey Governor Chris Christie. And here's the Texas Governor Rick Perry back in February. This is an appearance on IPTV's Iowa Press. Here he is brushing off a question about coming to Iowa to recruit business.
Iowa would not be a real highly productive place because you're more people are working in Iowa than have ever worked before in their lives. Your unemployment rate is 4.2%. Your governor has done some extraordinary things here to make this one of the more competitive states in the country. So if I were going to go recruit businesses, I'd probably go to California or Illinois. Would be a better fishing.
Okay, we've heard of better fishing. We heard a couple of cuts there, Rick Perry, before that, Chris Christie. It's no surprise, of course, Republican candidates praising fellow Republicans. But Governor Branstad doesn't endorse candidates, hasn't been known to. Tim Hagel, what does the governor have to offer these people that they come and praise our governor up and down for?
Well, you know, it's a couple of things. And one is, of course, that they want to help a fellow Republican governor get reelected. And so there's that. And as Larry Sabato, I saw quoted as saying, well, Iowa's a lovely place. Of course, he went on to say that, well, it's also a place where people that have presidential ambitions tend to come. So many other states are lovely places, too, and you don't see them popping into these states quite as much. And so we know Perry, of course, ran last time, is maybe thinking about a second run. Christie's maybe thinking about a presidential run. And so as much as you want to help the incumbents and keep Republicans in office, these folks also want to make friends. Even if Governor Branstad doesn't officially endorse folks, there are certain people that he might like or might not like, and maybe people that he can introduce these folks to who may be able to help, whether it's Christie or Perry or anybody else, help them if they decide to actually enter or more seriously test the waters here in Iowa. And that can be very helpful to know who to contact, who's a good expert in terms of the caucuses, who can help you with your ground game, those sorts of things.
So it is Donna Hoffman, what Tim is alluding to, that things that are sort of behind the curtain, so to speak, that we don't necessarily see every day, the people who can connect with the right donors or get the ground game going with the right people. They may have this in common.
Right. And, you know, another key about the caucuses is it's about relationships. And that's what Tim was speaking of in terms of, you know, the behind the scenes. And this is who you need to talk to. Relationships are key. And again, you know, some of these people may not run in 16, but they may run in 20. Relationships are really important in terms of developing those in the caucuses, because that can help you with networks that are important within the Republican Party to get people to turn out again on that cold evening in January or February.
Mm-hmm. After his latest 4-day tour, Governor Perry of Texas will have spent 12 days in Iowa this presidential election cycle. That's more than any other potential 2016 White House aspirant. I wonder, how much work does he have to do in convincing party activists to give him another look after that promising candidacy in 2012 fizzled into political embarrassment? Wouldn't be going too far, would it, Tim Hagel?
No, it wouldn't. And, you know, obviously the oops moment is the one that really stands out, but there were other problems
not
as well.
Not remembering the third department he wanted to eliminate.
Right. Yeah. And so it's I think it's going to be a tough sell, and people will be taking, you know, a very close look at him if he decides to enter the race. He's done more of his homework in terms of preparing himself, apparently. on a number of issues. And also, of course, we learned later that he had some, his back surgery had not recovered fully, and that was hampering his ability to enter the race, and he wasn't fully prepared and so forth. So he can get in, and I think people will give him a second look, and certainly they like to hear him talk regardless of whether he's a presidential candidate. But he's going to have to be very careful to not make any of the same mistakes, because if he does, then people say, oh, there we go again, and he'll get eliminated a lot faster than he might have the first time around.
The glasses won't do the trick on him their own.
Right.
The new eyewear.
Yeah, not quite.
Okay. Rick Santorum, let's talk about him, because he was also present in last cycle. In fact, the former Pennsylvania U.S. Senator squeaked out a win in the 2012 GOP caucuses in Iowa. He'll be in Boone, Ames, and Des Moines during a two-day trip Friday and Saturday. He'll have spent 8 days in Iowa this cycle, doing at least 10 events. How do you see Rick Santorum's possible candidacy, Donna?
Well, he certainly has, a network of people within the state that he called upon in the last cycle. He was one of the candidates that went to all the counties in the last cycle, and he, squeaked out that win in the caucuses at the, eventually. And so he has those things to draw upon. I think he's well suited. He now has is working with anyway a video company, which I find kind of interesting that they're producing some Christian theme oriented kind of video production. And so, these are all things that keep him in touch with the people who will rally to his side in the caucuses.
Mike Huckabee, the former Arkansas governor, is no stranger to Iowa. He will fly to Iowa either late Thursday or early Friday, in time for an early morning session with Christian conservative activists at the Iowa Renewal Project event in Cedar Rapids. He'll be back to New York City. He has, of course, his show on Fox News. He'll return to Iowa on Saturday to speak in the evening at the Family Leadership Summit in Ames. He will have spent 5 days in Iowa this cycle, doing at least 5 events. Mike Huckabee, size him up, Tim Hagel. Are people going to... Quite a bit of enthusiasm for him in 2008 when he ran, certainly.
Certainly there was, and he sort of surged at the very end there and managed to beat Romney. I'm not sure what his appeal will be. He certainly had his television show, so he certainly kept his self in the news, so to speak. But some conservatives were maybe not as comfortable with him, that maybe he proved to not be as conservative as they thought he was. And it may be a situation where, well, his time has passed, perhaps. On the other hand, maybe the time off has given him a fresh perspective and he can come at it with more vigor, but he would certainly be competing with somebody like Santorum, not to mention other folks who may be stronger on other issues like Ted Cruz and some of the younger folks, Rand Paul or Marco Rubio.
Mike Huckabee will be at that Family Leadership Summit, as will Rick Santorum. I guess we can guess maybe some of the others. I don't have the list there complete. I think 5 total.
Yeah, Cruz and Jindal and Perry, as well as Huckabee and Santorum, are slated to be on that agenda.
It's a gathering of Christian conservative activists. How does, Donna, that gathering fit into the broader race to win or place well in the Iowa caucuses?
Well, this is one of the, I think, key constituencies that if you're going to run and you want to do well in the caucuses, that you have to be familiar with. You have to at least address them, talk to them, be able to talk about their issues. That you may not always agree on the same issues, but it is a constituency that the candidates who are going to run in the Iowa caucuses need to be familiar with, need to have addressed and be able to talk about those issues.
The only candidate who's been visiting us or will visit us, Bobby Jindal, we haven't talked about him. A little bit of time for him. Governor of Louisiana, Friday and Saturday, I believe he'll be in Iowa talking to conservative preachers, according to the Des Moines Register, catching some of the excitement of a sprint car racetrack. He'll work the crowd at the Iowa Fairgrounds, take part in a roundtable with GOP U.S. Representative Steve King, some other events. He will have spent 5 days in Iowa doing at least 5 events. Bobby Jindal, not one of the higher tier candidates, at least at this point.
Not seemingly so. He's an interesting sort of question mark that he was very experienced at very high-level policy sorts of things at a very young age. And then, of course, became governor, eventually governor of Louisiana. And he one time gave the Republican response, and it turned out to be very flat, not well received particularly. And it seemed to hurt him in terms of kind of national exposure. So he's been working for the last several years to sort of rehabilitate himself in that regard. And it's kind of odd how much that, that sort of one performance did, in fact, hurt him among the Republican base. He doesn't come across as a firebrand, as maybe not as charismatic, maybe a little bit too much of a policy wonk, but those are things that he can probably work on in terms of his delivery, and certainly showing up places like the Family Leader and other events will help him in that regard.
Some others who haven't been here recently but who are mentioned when we talk of GOP Republican candidates, potential ones, Jeb Bush, Donna Hoffman, does he show signs of running?
I don't think so yet. There's certainly a question mark there. I don't think he's ruled it out, but he hasn't ruled it in. He's a well-known candidate. He doesn't have to be, you know, dipping his toe into the water, so to speak, quite yet because of his family name, because he's a pretty well-known quantity. So I think there's a big question mark behind his name.
Okay. Let's talk about some of the tweaks that, well, may or may not be happening to the Iowa caucus. It's a complicated process. Has long excluded overseas military voters, and despite some calls for reform, it seems at this point, perhaps you can offer Tim or Donna some other insights here, both political parties don't seem eager to change that. Caucus rules require voters to be present in person at caucus sites. It's usually on a weeknight that we have the caucuses, and so we don't know how many servicemen and women overseas have been excluded because of this rule of the Iowa caucuses. We do know in the 2012 general election, though, that over 4,000 Iowans voted from outside the United States, including those in the military. I wonder, do we know, Donna, why parties are reluctant to make this tweak to include servicemen and women not physically present to have some sort of absentee ballot?
Well, they're trying to make some accommodations in this regard. The Democrats are looking at some teleconferencing that might work. The problem becomes you can't just have an easy fix. What people might assume is an easy fix of, we'll just let them, you know, do an absentee ballot. The caucuses aren't a balloting event. They're not a primary. If we were to be a primary, if New Hampshire could make the case that we were now a primary, our first status would be in great jeopardy because New Hampshire has the lock on first primary. We have the lock on first caucus.
But the procedural
aspects of those are very different.
Uh-huh. But in the, between the two parties, even in Iowa and caucuses, isn't the Iowa Republican caucus very much like a primary in that you simply vote, whereas the Democrats do this kind of herding of people into various groups, right?
Well, at the end of the day, both caucuses elect delegates to go to the next level of convention, which is the county convention. That's the entire purpose of them. The Republicans, you know, largely for the media, do take that kind of straw poll. That is what's reported. The Democrats report delegate strength. And so the media comes here in droves, as we know. They want to know who won, who didn't do as well as expected, et cetera. And so the parties in the state have kind of accommodated that to that to some degree. But caucuses are about electing delegates to go to the next level of convention. On the Democratic side, they've had to been pledged to pick particular candidates, but not so on the Republican side. Now, the Republicans at the national level have kind of are trying to make that be the case. And that's kind of being fleshed out now. But caucuses are very different in terms of the way they function from a primary. And if we were to start to drift over into New Hampshire's territory, they protect that territory quite well.
Mm-hmm. Any talk so far of Iowa losing its first in the nation status? There's always, it seems, some threat to that, at least in our minds here in Iowa. Tim Hagel?
Yeah, and it's funny because you're starting to see when the national reporters are starting to talk about all of the potential presidential candidates coming to Iowa, that you're already starting to see the Iowa snark coming in, where they're kind of complaining, well, why Iowa? And so you'll get a lot of the well, you know, why is it first in the nation? And not just us. I mean, New Hampshire gets it too, but we get it quite a bit as well since we're a little further afield from the East Coast reporters. And so you're starting to see some of that creep in. So there's always that. But certainly the fact that certain people are unable to participate, I kind of hate the word exclude because it sounds purposeful, but it's more a matter of if they aren't able to participate, whether it's because they're serving overseas in the military or even within the country in the military and can't get away or work that night or just are homebound or whatever it happens to be, because you have to show up, that makes an important difference. And so certainly the parties want to look at those things.
We've run out of time. Tim Hagel, Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of Iowa. Donna Hoffman, Chair of Political Science at the University of Northern Iowa. Donna, Tim, thank you for joining us this hour with your insights.
Welcome.
Happy to be here.
River to River is produced by Emily Woodbury, Claire Roth, and Lindsay Moon. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Tomorrow on the River to River, I'll talk with Stacey Apple, a candidate for Iowa's open congressional seat in the 3rd District. She's running against David Young to replace Tom Latham, who's retiring. Then in the second half hour of our program tomorrow, a new report showing pesticides negatively affecting honeybee populations widespread in Iowa's waterways. That's tomorrow on this program. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.